Hi, my name is Elisheva, grateful member of Al-Anon. Really happy to be here. Good morning to most of you. Good afternoon to some of you. So I'm going to speak about two tools that I found very helpful from the beginning and that I still use today. The first tool is Hatfield Toolbox. There's an endless amount of tools in our literature. And when I first started working with my present sponsor, he suggested that I go through the literature and pick out the tools and make a list of them. And I found that it was easiest to begin with the daily readers because each page is short and each page has the same format. It tells us what it was like, which is the powerlessness, the problem, what they did, which are the tools that they used, and how it is today, which is always so much better than how it was in the beginning. And as I read through the Daily Reader, I found myself saying over and over again, oh, I have that powerlessness. Oh, I have that problem in a different area, but it's the same idea. Oh, I really have this one. And as I build identification with the authors, it increases the chances of us saying, oh, we have the same problem. If I do what they did, use the tools that they used, I'm likely to get the same result, which is a spiritual awakening. So I began writing my list in a document on my phone, and then I added it to it daily. And my phone is always almost always with me. And so when I get stuck with a problem and I forget everything and I have no idea what I should do or what my options are, what my choices are, I just open up the document. And I have so many today that I can just continue scrolling. And then I just press stop at any point and I start reading randomly. And I always find that there are many tools that I can apply in any situation, no matter where I am. So that's the first tool I wanted to speak about. The second tool is taking responsibility for our thoughts. So in the book, One Day at a Time, on page 7, it says, when I'm pained by anything that happens outside of myself, it is not that thing which hurts me, but the way I think and feel about it. And so for me, what that means is it's not what the person said or did that bothers me. It's the story I tell myself about it. And that's really good news because I can't change what other people do or say, but I can change the story that I tell myself about what's going on around me. And what I was taught was that there are two principles, that when I follow them, my life is manageable. And when I don't follow them, my life becomes unmanageable. And the first rule is that I'm responsible for myself. And I'm responsible for my thoughts. And my thoughts affect my feelings, my beliefs, the words that I say, and the actions that I take. And the second principle is that the other person is responsible for their thoughts, and their thoughts affect their feelings, their beliefs, the words they use, and the actions they take. So what does this mean? I'm not responsible for that first thought that pops into my mind, but I am responsible what I do with that first thought. It's on me if I run with it and imagine every single horrible scenario that could have happened. And when I do that, my life becomes unmanageable. My other option is to turn to God and share with him that I'm having a very hard time staying in the here and now and asking him if he can come into my life and do for me what I cannot do for myself, which is stay in the here and now. And then after I pray, I like to have a short, opposite, healthy action to take to show God that I'm serious, that I really want to change. And so either I'll close my eyes and I'll listen to the sounds around me, or I'll look around at the colors around me, or I'll say a spiritual prayer or a religious prayer, or go over a spiritual concept, something to keep my mind busy and distracted from going back to that unhealthy place. Sometimes I'll sing a song, anything just to get my mind, to stop my mind from going back to that unhealthy place. Everyone I find breaks these principles. My problem as an Anon is that I break it in the extreme. And there are four ways that I break these two principles. The first thing is I think I'm responsible for others. So I have these plans for people. I have a plan that the addict should be clean. And I have a plan that my parents should be healthy because I thought I need them to be healthy for me to be healthy. And I have a plan for each of my children, how they can be successful in life. And I thought that I had these plans because I love them and I happen to know what's best for them. And if they would just follow my plan, my life and their life would be great. But what I found is that I'm able to suggest my plan in a very nice way, but if the people don't take it, then I try to shove it down their throat. And that's not very loving. And I found that the real reason I have this plan is because I believe that I need people to do certain things and to say certain things and believe certain things in order for me to be safe in this world. And so if they don't follow my plan, I can get mean and manipulative and controlling and threaten and punish and cry. I'm willing to do anything to get people to follow my plan when I'm in my disease. And when I'm controlling, my life becomes unmanageable. I didn't want the consequences of my controlling. I didn't want to harm my relationships, but I couldn't stop myself controlling. I wasn't managing my life. My disease of anonism was managing it. The second way that I break the two principles is that I thought I'm not responsible for myself. And sometimes it came up because I thought I was unworthy. And sometimes it came up because I was just so busy taking care of everyone else's life, I had no time left to take care of my own. And so I would neglect my basic needs. I didn't eat 3 meals a day. I didn't drink enough. I certainly wasn't sleeping enough. I would take my children to the dentist every year. I buy them new clothing in the beginning of the season, before every holiday. But I wouldn't allow myself the time or the money to do that for myself. And in the book, Paths to Recovery, it gives the example. This is my favorite example. Do you prepare a meal fit for a king when the family comes? But when you're alone in the house, eat standing in front of the refrigerator. And when I neglect myself, my life is unmanageable. Now, I never woke up in the morning. The plan was never to neglect myself, just the opposite. I would wake up in the morning and say, today I'm going to take care of myself. Today I'm going to drink enough so I don't end up getting a migraine. Today I'm going to eat 3 meals a day. But I couldn't carry through with my plan. And when I can't carry through my plan, my life becomes unmanageable. And the third way that I break these two principles is that I think others are not responsible for themselves. They can't be. So I'll say about the addict and others, they're so disorganized. They're so incapable. They're so absent-minded. They need me. And then I do for others what they can do for themselves, and I accept unacceptable behavior. I'm also very uncomfortable when I think that someone is slightly not happy with everything I've said or done. And so I'll go and I'll try and people please. I mother people. When I'm worried about someone, I'll do for them something that they don't need me to do and they probably don't even want me to do. I caretake, I rescue, I prevent a crisis. I don't allow people to deal with the consequences of their actions. And I basically become a doormat. And when I'm a doormat, my life becomes unmanageable. And the fourth way that I break these two principles is that I think that other people are responsible for me. So other people's thoughts, their beliefs, what they say, their actions determine what I think, what I believe, what I say, and what I do. So the addict acts out and I feel shame. Or the addict is sad, so I'm sad. Or the addict is sad, so I'm happy because I have to balance him out. Either way, what he's feeling determines how I feel. One time, one of the addicts in my life bought me a tablet and they were out of town. And I dropped the tablet. And in the split second that before the tablet hit the floor, I already came up with 3 reasons why the addict was responsible for the screen to shatter. One, he bought himself a tablet and bought himself a sticker to put on it to prevent the screen from shattering, but he didn't do that for me. He should have. He bought himself a case, but not me. He should have. And I can't remember the third reason, but it was something along the same lines. And I believed it. I really believed anything that went wrong in my life, it was the addict's fault. And when I give responsibility to someone else, for me, it always ends up with a lot of blame. So I thought my parents and my husband were responsible to fix me. If they can just love me the way I need to be loved, I'd feel okay. And if I don't feel okay, it's their fault. And my problem is that my anonism, my anonymism blurs the lines of where other people end and where I begin. And it's a disease of a lack of boundaries. And it all begins with my distorted thinking. And through working the steps again and again, through living in steps 10, 11, and 12, through working with sponsees, God has come into my life and he's changed my thinking. And today I know that I'm responsible for myself and I usually take responsibility for myself. I know that others are responsible for themselves and I can allow them to choose to take responsibility for themselves or to choose not to take responsibility for themselves. And if they choose not to, I don't have to jump in and save them. Today, I don't accept unacceptable behavior, which doesn't mean that every once in a while I still do something nice for someone that they can do themselves. but I no longer forced her to foster dependency by constantly, consistently doing for others what they can do for themselves. I help people when they need help and when they ask for help, and I let people deal with the consequences of their own behavior. And this didn't happen in one day, but it's been a journey, and it's a journey where there's still a lot more room to grow. And I find that it's today I can accept myself on the journey with the mistakes that I make, because I have tools to take inventory, to ask God to show me what my mistakes are and what my corrective measures are. And I'm grateful to be on this journey. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for sharing, Elisheva. Thank you. I'll just remind everyone that the topic we've chosen in Israel was a spiritual toolkit for the newcomers. So thank you, Elisheva. And we're going up for Chaya.
Hi, I'm Chaya. Thank you to the organizers. This is really cool. One of the things that's been very interesting to me in Al-Anon is how really simple statements in the slogans, the little itty-bitty, seemingly, you know, very simple statements can come to have really profound meaning and be helpful throughout my time in recovery. And the one that I chose to talk about today is keep coming back. I first came into Al-Anon meetings 18 years ago, and I heard keep coming back in every meeting that I went to. I didn't really think much about it. It seemed like a simple kind of statement to, you know, encourage membership and to be saying like, oh, we see you, we're glad you're here. It just kind of washed over me. But I did keep coming back because the relief that I felt in coming to meetings and hearing people share experiences of living with alcoholism that I thought nobody could relate to, that I thought were my experiences alone, hearing other people share stories that could have been my story was such a relief. And also to be able to share my own story and to talk about the experience of growing up with and of living with alcoholism that I up to that point felt like was a betrayal of my family and of family secrets to talk about. I felt so much relief. So I did keep coming back. But after a certain amount of time of going to meetings, I wanted something more than relief, which was to begin to see change in my life, the kind of change that I heard other members talking about. So I asked someone to sponsor me and I started working the steps. And that was 17 years ago. And that process, which began 17 years ago, that was really the beginning of a different kind of a life, of a life of recovery from the family disease of alcoholism, a life in which I'm doing my best, you know, one day at a time to apply Al-Anon principles to my life and to my relationships and to all my projects and endeavors. And that also was the beginning of service in Al-Anon and of helping other people to work the steps and sponsoring other members. But here's the thing, is that what starts to happen in my experience, not just one time, but a few times over the, you know, past decade, almost two decades of recovery, is that when my life starts to fill up with what I've heard people call the blessings of recovery, when I start to be busy, when my life starts to be complicated, and when I feel like things are really working, the temptation there is to think like, I'm too busy to make a meeting. And sometimes it's really like, I don't want to trivialize that. Sometimes not being able to make a meeting is really like serious and involves, you know, leaving a bunch of young children and going out at night and traveling an hour each way. It's not like it's not a simple thing, but my mind will start to do all these kinds of calculations about how great everything's going and forgetting, you know, like why it's going so great and what was the source of change in my life. So about 7 years ago, when my second to youngest kid was born, I really decided like I wasn't getting that much out of the weekly meeting. There was only one meeting at the time here in Jerusalem. And I just really felt like it wasn't like serving me in my life. You know, I can already, the way I was starting to think about these things, it's serving me. I decided with my, you know, with my brain that I needed to stop going to the meeting. So, you know, I stopped going to the meeting. I thought, oh, I'm using the tools so much. I have all of these other, you know, outside resources in my life that are really standing me in good stead. And, you know, things didn't change dramatically when I stopped going to meetings. But that weekly meeting was that last sort of tether to the program that gradually then the literature dropped off and I wasn't in contact with the other Al-Anon members. And then what I've seen it described as familiar difficulties started to pop up in my life. And I didn't see the connection. I didn't see that like there was a direct relationship between these things because it was subtle until it wasn't subtle, until it was, you know, standing on a street and yelling at a bus that had already left as though like my yelling was going to draw it back to me, right? And then I thought, keep coming back. That was like, that was not a moment in which there was going, I was going to like really relate to like a very complex, you know, thought that I would have along the lines about something that I'd worked through in the steps. I needed like the beautiful simplicity of that instruction that I had heard over and over again to keep coming back, to keep just put my body in a chair and go back to the meeting. So I made a phone call to another Al-Anon member, which like was not easy to do in that time. I was embarrassed. And I had a lot of ego at having like, you know, at having let my program like lapse. But that phone call led to coming back into the meeting and into being able to get a new sponsor and to start working the steps again. And, you know, now like 7 years in, I know from that experience, I know that that voice is still going to keep coming back, especially now when getting to a meeting means being in a Zoom call and it's complicated in a whole other way. But what's become clearer to me is I think that there is like a really specific set of things that I get from coming back. And that's what I want to share. Like, first of all, just to be in connection with other Al-Anon members, to remember that I'm not alone with the disease of alcoholism. To carry the message, you know, I can get so in my own problems, my own difficulties, and forget that like I've received a tremendous amount from this program and have a lot of gratitude. And when I get to put that gratitude into practice by sharing my story, I have the potential to help someone else and to be able to hear myself share my story and to be able to make that connection. But like another like really big piece of why I keep coming back is to stay honest. To, you know, I can read literature and be isolated and can be in a state of deception about where things are actually at in my life and, you know, the extent to which I'm applying these principles. But when I sit and hear other people sharing things that directly relate to my story and you know, the pitfalls I face, it really creates a situation in which I can be honest with myself and honest with you guys. And like, another reason is to get to hear newcomers share and to be inspired by the newcomers. We're always like at a different place in this journey, and to hear people at all different phases of recovery has been so meaningful to me in hearing new perspectives and fresh ideas and ways of approaching this program. And fundamentally, like, I'm just going to keep coming back to fill up my tank of this program because I have a lot of years of living with alcoholism and a lot of the messages and the voice and the music of alcoholism inside my brain. And, you know, sometimes things are going to be easy and it's going to be easy for me to apply spiritual principles to my life, and sometimes not so much. So to be able to keep fundamentally filling my ears with recovery language, with letting recovery become like the background of my thoughts, keeps my tank full, keeps me being able to connect to recovery. And last is really, is like a lot more subtle for me, which is to be able to share how higher power is working in my life and be able to hear other people sharing that. I can so often, you know, have a lens on what's going on where I will forget that it's not all about me and the other person, but that there's another aspect to that, an aspect that's harder to see, which is, you know, my higher power's work in my life and in the world. And being able to hear that from other people and to share it myself keeps me connected to that idea. You know, sometimes it's not easy to know how to end a share, but in this case, I am going to say that I'm going to keep coming back.
Thank you, Chaya. All right. Okay, so it's my turn now. Hi, everyone. Again, my name is Aviad, grateful member of Al-Anon. Hey, everyone. It's really inspiring to hear all the shares, and it's really amazing. This online conference worldwide. I wanted to share about attachment with love. And I know when I was a newcomer and I've heard that statement, of course, it was like a puzzle. I wasn't sure what you mean. And I've heard a lot of explanations, which I'll share some. And, you know, today I know in recovery that it's not about figuring out stuff or understanding stuff. It's more of the experience when I take the actions, you know, when I work the steps and I join the fellowship and I am giving help and receiving help, this transformation just happens and I experience it. But as an Al-Anon, I always like to explain and think and try to understand, and I'm letting go of that one day at a time. But someone was explaining talking about detachment with love is that, you know, we're so enmeshed a lot of the times with our relationships, especially with the alcoholics in our lives. And it's like two hooks like that. And it's just, it's not working. And we have to detach in order to love the other person. And so some members I've heard reporting that they had to detach sometimes without love, sometimes with anger. They just had to detach. And then they learned how to detach with love. And I guess that's okay. And the other side of it, it's what I've learned to do is to learn to kind of receive the love I receive in Al-Anon and take that love in. And as I've listened to the slogans and the shares, and I've started to work the steps and started to applying it to my daily life, I started bringing back the focus on me. And then I could take all that love I got from the fellowship and from the meetings and slowly from my connection with my higher power and just love Aviad, which was not simple at all. And then when I had love for Aviad and I was focusing on myself, I was able to see other people with their difficulties and like previously shared, you know, let them have their experience of loving themselves, taking care of themselves, suffering the consequences of their actions, and realizing it's loving to give someone the opportunity, the dignity to learn from their own mistakes rather than trying to fix them, save them, and rob them of their growth experiences. And so it took me a while to realize that these principles, this detachment is actually detachment with love, because trying to shove their throat my plan for them is not loving, I guess. So it was a gradual process for me. And when I came into the program, you know, one of my relatives, wanted me to co-sign a mortgage. Now, I was single. I had a good job, but I wasn't married yet. I didn't have my own place. And now co-sign a mortgage for someone else because they just got a hold of a lot of money and they're afraid to spend it. So they want to buy a house, but no bank would give them a mortgage because of their financial record. So just, you know, just co-sign this and, you know, it'll be okay. And, you know, growing up with this family disease, you know, I have a lot of shame and I have a lot of guilt. And I mean, these people helped me so much throughout the years. How can I say no? Right. And thank God for Al-Anon in my life. I thank God for that sponsor that I had back then who told me, Aviad, I don't know how it is in Israel. I'm from the U.S., but, you know, if you're signing one mortgage, they're not going to let you sign too many of those, you know, in a few more years when you get married and you'll have your own family. So, you know, and of course, he didn't tell me what to do because it's a beautiful, gentle program. And we don't tell people what to do. We don't give advice in Al-Anon, you know, we share from our own experiences. And he shared some of his experience. It's just, you know, and I got enough strength, you know, to tell that person, no, I love you, I respect you. And I really, you know, grateful for all the things you've done to me, but I think this is not appropriate and I won't be able to co-sign this mortgage. You know, and I had friends and members to share with when, you know, when they gave me the face of, you know, for after all I did, you know, how can you not co-sign my bullshit? I'm sorry, my mortgage. And, you know, and go with that. And I'm so grateful I didn't, because I didn't have the power on my own, you know, to say no. If I would have thought it's a bad idea, I know best chances that I would have said yes, just because I thought, yeah, it's a good idea. I mean, how could I not help them? You know, after all, they helped me. So that was how it used to be like. And, you know, and how helped. And the thing is that, you know, every time a new drama comes into my life, I have to go back to steps 1, 2, and 3 and, you know, write myself newcomer on the head and treat myself as a newcomer and, you know, and share my thoughts with other members, because I tend to forget all these principles. You know, if it's a new, all of a sudden it's a new qualifier that I realize, or, you know, or a new drama from the same one. And I just, sometimes it just gets me when I'm unprepared. And same situation nowadays, you know, with problems of housing and problems of money and just realizing how deep other people's problems are. I'm so grateful for Detachment with Love, where I realize, you know, these are not my problems. And, you know, and I still have to, you know, and that's what I want to share. I battle with these voices, right? About, come on, aren't you selfish here? And the truth is, I'm not. And it's and the truth is that, you know, a lot of the time when I used to people please and help people, it was from the wrong motive. And that's what you taught me. You know, people pleasing and helping other people is not always so helpful or so loving. And you taught me to consider my motives. And this is why we have inventories and we share with other people and we go to meetings and we learn from other people's experience. And when I inventoried my fears, I realized that it was selfish, because the real fear, the real motive to do it, to help other people when I know I shouldn't, is the fear. And the fear for me was, you know, if something happens to them and they're so close to me, it would break me down. I would be devastated and I'll drop dead, or I'll just, you know, die from the grief. And as my sponsor pointed out, you know, realizing that my higher power and the Al-Anon program can help me build a life that I'm connected to and have friends and fellowship to be around, that I would feel good, content, even happy in my life, no matter what that person or the other person suffers. And, you know, I understand why some newcomers can be skeptical, but I've seen it in my life, you know, and other people's choices doesn't have to mess up my life. It doesn't have to. It can often do if I don't take my actions. But when I work this program, it doesn't have to be that way. And so I'm so grateful for Detachment with Love that helped me trust my higher power, that no matter what other people's choices are, I can have my own life and it could be a happy and successful life, regardless of the alcoholic and their decisions. So I'm just so grateful for this hope in my life today. And with that, we'll move to, I'll finish my share. Yeah, thank you. And we'll move to Osher. Osher, go ahead.
You may not be. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Now I can. Thank you. Okay. Hi, everyone. I'm Osher. My home group is here in Jerusalem, Israel, as well. And I didn't know when I first came into Al-Anon why I qualified for Al-Anon, other than I was in recovery in other programs. And for about 2 years, a couple of dozen people kept saying, maybe you want to try Al-Anon, you know, because my husband just at the time just didn't do what I needed him to do. And I came here not really knowing why I was here. And I was living in the States at the time and the meetings were in English, except they sounded to me like Chinese. I had no idea what you guys were saying. And a few months into it, I realized that I grew up in an alcoholic home and with an alcoholic parent and an untreated Al-Anon parent. And so I'm going to talk about one of my favorite topics today to talk about in general, and that's higher power. As part of the newcomer spiritual toolkit, we need to start to develop a relationship with higher power. And, there are trials and tribulations there, right? It's challenging. First of all, I had no idea what you were talking about when you said higher power, and you talked about God. And I walked into a room where I was pretty sure I was the only Jew in the room. And so, like, this is a cult. I will back out slowly. Maybe they won't notice. You know, there were four people at the meeting, but maybe they won't notice. And I just was very grateful for my, one of my first sponsors, the first one who took me through the steps, who was a born again Christian. And you know what? Just doesn't matter. Right? Because and so if you're new here and you're wondering why I'm talking about religions and so, and we never talk about them, it's to show that that's the principle of anonymity, right? Is that there are a whole bunch of faces here, but it really doesn't matter what you look like. It's one soul connecting with another soul, and that's what we're here for. And so that's been my experience. And I really, really hope that if you haven't experienced that yet, that you will. I pray for that for you. So, in step one, I was taught that I do not have any power over everything I thought I had power over. Thank you very much. Like, I spent my entire life trying to get you to do the right thing, because I know what that is, and trying to get me to be able to do the right thing. I was taught in step one that I do not have any power over anything other than my thoughts, my feelings, my decisions, and my actions. And I only have power over those once I am aware of those. And so that's step one. And so if I don't have any power, I need to gain that power someplace else and look for it elsewhere. And so in step two, we start our journey of finding a higher power, something that's bigger than me. There are a lot of different versions of that. And so one of the most beautiful processes that I went through in this program was to call people and say, hi, so can you tell me about your higher power? Fun conversations, I have to say. So if you've never done those and you're still trying to figure out higher power and you want to, like, call me. The organizer said that they'll give out my number, my email. That's perfectly fine with me. And we'll have a conversation about my higher power. I'd love to tell you about my higher power. And so I asked a lot of questions. You know, people said, pray. And I was like, how does one do that? Not that I didn't grow up in a home where there was prayer. Not that I never went to, organized religious prayer and so on. But, like, you know, praise to ask higher power to show you the way. I'm like, what, you know? And so I had a lot of questions. And so one of the pieces of my experience, Strength and Hope, is that I asked those questions. I called people and asked them, and people took the time and the energy to answer them. So thank you guys for that. As part of my step two, my sponsor suggested that I make two lists. One was my higher power is, and the other was I want my higher power to be. And so a lot of stuff went on that I want my higher power to be list when I went to conferences such as this, and I heard you guys talk about your higher power. And one time I went to a conference and someone shared, my higher power is my best friend. And I went, I want that, that, I want that, you know? And interestingly enough, I didn't have to. There's a saying in program that we work the steps, but the steps work us. And so I just have to let the steps work me. You know, it's not about I got to do this right anymore. It's not about the Al-Anon like it's all about me. But rather, if I do what you guys tell me to do, good orderly direction, which is an acronym for God, then it just happens. And, you know, and all of a sudden I'm capable of doing things that like I could never, ever, ever imagine doing before or not doing, shutting my mouth, for example. And so often when I went over these lists with sponsees, when I gave them this assignment, I noticed that like stuff that was on, I want my higher power to be was on my now on, had been added to my higher power is list. So I think that two of the, you know, best characteristics that I could tell you about higher power, if you're wanting to be closer to your higher power, if you're redefining your higher power, which I've done several times in programs, so, you know, they told me it was okay. So if they told me it was okay, it must be okay for you too. Keep on. Or if you're new and you don't really have any idea what this higher power thing is. So two of the best characteristics that I could share with you is, in fact, that my higher power is my best friend today. And I try to walk with my higher power hand in hand throughout the day as much as possible. Far, far, far from every waking moment, but a lot more than I have in the past and a lot more quality than I have in the past. So keep coming back because for me, it's been what some may consider a slow process, although I don't know what this, you know, idea of time really is today, but it's okay because I can see the progress. And the other thing that I think is a very, very important characteristic to kind of internalize is that my higher power is not me. And that for me has been really, really important because for many, many years, you guys told me in my beginning years that it was okay to be angry at higher power. So I took that and ran with it for about 13 years. I don't recommend it. And so I spent a lot of time telling higher power that higher power was doing it wrong. And so that's not characterizing higher power as not me, right? That's character. Well, maybe it is. It's just characterizing me as the judge of higher power. Not great. And so when I say that higher power is not me, I also want to kind of clarify, and this might sound a little bit paradoxical, but hey, that's program. I truly believe, for me, that every single one of us has a God spark. And we also have an ego. And the ego is what is my human side, right? It's what makes me here human, having this corporeal life. And I have a God spark that I can indulge, and I can choose to follow that God spark and that connection that I have with my higher power. Sometimes it's not an easy choice. Sometimes I really, really want, and when I really, really want, that's ego, right? Sometimes I really have to right now, that urgency, always ego. Some of the stuff that I've learned throughout the years is coming from an alcoholic home, I have a lot of abandonment issues and rejection issues. And so I have a lot of fear of abandonment and rejection. I love what was said before, you know, that I tend to make the mistake of believing that my security is going to come from the people around me, the number of people, look how many people love me, right? The amount of time that I spend with humans, right? There's a lot of, mistakes there. And the truth is that my higher power will never, never, ever leave me, right? Because if I have a God spark, if I am made of a God spark, if I am in essence a God spark, then I am always, always, always a part of higher power and never separate. And all of my resentments and all of my fears and all of my inappropriate behaviors and everything that we inventory in for, all come down to, I forgot that I'm not separate from my higher power. And I made that mistake once again. So one of the things that people suggested to me was to name my higher power. And so my higher power is a name that I think only one or two people in the world know. And because it's mine, you know, it's my name for my higher power. I'll close up because I was told 10 minutes. Sorry, I'm just looking at my list here. I'll close with, I was told to talk to higher power it's still a little difficult for me, right? There's still a little stereotypical shaming kind of thing going on there. But in times when I am closest with my higher power, I'm able to do that. And that too is something that, you know, just having a conversation with higher power. And it doesn't need to be a foxhole conversation, right? Of like, I don't like this. Can you help this? I don't know what to do with this. But it could be, this is really awesome. Or thanks, you know, thanks. I'll keep coming back.
Thank you. Thank you, Avi. Thank you, Shaya, Elisheva, and Usher. Did I say that right? Thank you guys so much. It's wonderful to have you here, Avi. It's good to meet you face to face. Avi only and I only spoke on a email. Avi approached me one day and sent an email to the AWB and said, you know, you could do translation. So he gave me the idea of translation. I thought, I don't want to mess with that. So I said, Billy, we're going to do translation.